Hello, it's February 7th, 2025. My name is Simone, and this is a special edition of 90s Crime Time. Hello and welcome to a brand new special edition episode of 90s Crime Time. And if you're new to 90s Crime Time, welcome to the show. Like always, I hope you all have had a great week so far and are preparing for a good weekend. My apologies again for not releasing a new episode last Thursday like I usually do. But if you follow 90s Crime Time on Instagram, I posted a few times about how I unexpectedly became very ill, like it was scary ill. Again, I am so sorry, and I plan to be back to a regular schedule next week, meaning a new episode on next Thursday. But today's episode is a special edition episode because it's what I call a mystery episode. Now, I've had mysteries on 90s Crime Time before, but this case was so mysterious to me because there are so many scenarios in this story that it could have been a crime or it may not have been a crime, but it was just so mysterious to me and to other people who have written about this story. And it's not really that well known, I don't believe, so that's why I wanted to bring it to you. Lastly, today's episode will be a little different because I couldn't find much information about the city to describe how I usually do at the beginning of the episodes, like where the crime or potential crime or not a crime took place. However, I still hope you find it interesting. Again, today's episode will have a different layout than the usual episode of 90s Crime Time, and I apologize for any mispronunciations that may occur in the episode. But with that, let's dive in to today's special edition case. On the cool, crisp night of May 7th, 1999, in Ozark, Alabama, local resident, 22-year-old Tamara Ward, wanted a night out. Reports state Tamara had a lot on her plate at a young age because not only was she a divorced mother of a 6-month-old daughter, but Tamara was also the legal guardian of her 7-year-old brother. You see, sometime before 1999, Tamara's mother, Anita, passed away, leaving Tamara and her then 2-year-old brother orphaned. However, even though she was barely 18 when Anita passed, Tamara fought for custody of her brother for some time. Several months later, though, after Tamara was finally granted custody of her brother, she became engaged to a man serving in the military and eventually married him. And reports state that she knew that her husband's job in the military would take him around the world, which seemed exciting. However, she didn't want to leave her brother in Alabama, so she and her husband frequently fought about the issue until he left the marriage and they eventually divorced. Still, after the marriage, Tamara gave birth to a baby girl she named Anita after her mother, and she called her Molly as a nickname. However, despite going through all of this, Tamara was known to keep a very positive attitude with a big smile on her face. But like any mom, on the night of May 7th, 1999, she wanted a break and decided to hang out with some friends. So, reports state she called her cousin Josephine and asked her to watch the children while she went out, especially since she would be meeting friends in the same city that Josephine lived in Enterprise, Alabama. And Josephine agreed. Reports state Tamara dropped the children off at around 9 p.m. and then made her way to her friend Eula Lee's apartment. Reports state that 28-year-old Eula Lee was a mother of two from Enterprise and was known around town as very social and family-oriented. And speaking of family, reports state Eula's cousin, 27-year-old Valerie McCoy, was also at Eula's that night hanging out. According to reports, Valerie was married with six children, ages 3 through 12, and she was known to dote on her family since they came first in her life. Lastly, at Eula's that night was the lady's other friend, 25-year-old Angela Roberts Young. Reports state Angela was single with no children, but she had lots of friends and she was very loved at her job as a nurse assistant at a nursing home. According to reports, as the ladies socialized at Eula's and the hours went by, the group decided to head to the home of 25-year-old Lamar Stackhouse, who was their friend. Reports further state that Lamar was a single man with no children, and he had overcome some obstacles in his life. For example, when he was a child, Lamar unfortunately dealt with childhood cancer with only a 50-50 chance to live, but he overcame the illness and won his cancer battle. However, as he got older, reports state Lamar got into some trouble with the law. But by 1999, he was trying to turn his life around and wanted to take some courses at his local community college. And as luck would have it for Lamar, on the day he hung out with the ladies, he went to his father's home and showed off his new 1986 Chevy Caprice car, which he had recently purchased. And it was his proudest possession. Reports further state the ladies got to Lamar's home at around 11:15 p.m., and they all hung out for a while. And then they were joined later by 29-year-old James, nicknamed Amp Reynolds. According to reports, James was a single father of one who lived with his grandmother in Webb, Alabama. Not much is known about James' early life, but what is known is that just like his other friends, James was very close to his family. But like Lamar, he too had some legal troubles, but was also trying to get his life together around this time. Back at Lamar's home, as the group hung out with Lamar that night, and as the early morning hours of May 8th crept in, they decided to go to the nearby club called Hideaway. Hideaway was a small club located in Op, Alabama, and was situated between a group of subsidized houses. The group was said to have made their way to the club, which was about 30 miles away from Lamar's home, at around 1:15 a.m., and the club was said to be packed. The group of friends didn't seem to mind, though, as reports state they partied with the crowd, dancing and drinking, until the club closed at around 3 a.m. This is where things take a drastic turn. Several hours after the club closed back in Enterprise, Tamara's cousin Josephine was expecting her to pick up the children, especially since it was now later in the day on the 8th, but Tamara hadn't shown up. Reports state Tamara called Josephine to check on the children a little before midnight on the 7th, and she reportedly told Josephine she would be staying with Valerie that night and would pick up the children later that morning. But she hadn't arrived, so Josephine continued to wait for Tamara and watch the children. However, a day went by and Tamara still hadn't reached out to Josephine or any other loved one. And strangely enough, word around town was that the other five in the group hadn't been heard from either for several hours. And by the time May 10th came around, and their families had seen none of the six arrive home or contact anyone, the group's loved ones reported all six missing. According to reports, the news of the missing six spread like wildfire throughout Enterprise, Op, and the surrounding communities. After all, how does a group of six adult friends simply seemingly vanish into thin air? Reports state further that after the announcement of the group going missing, local police around the community immediately got to work to try and find the friends. They reportedly started searching for them around Hideaway because maybe for some reason they got stuck in the neighborhood somewhere or got hurt there. But police could not find them in the area. But they did talk to some of the partygoers that night, and some of them stated they saw the group partying together, laughing, joking around, drinking, and dancing. Then they said they saw all of them leave together, get into Lamar's car, and drive away when the club closed. Police then talked to the club's security guard, and he said he recalled the group arriving and leaving the club. He also told police that when it was time for the club to close, he specifically remembered Lamar looking physically drunk as he got into the car to drive away. And when he apparently turned on the car, he revved the engine and blasted music to draw attention. The security guard said he went up to Lamar and encouraged him not to drive. And then he told police Lamar switched seats with one of the women to let them drive, but he couldn't identify which one. After questioning more witnesses, police then questioned some of the group's family members, and Josephine reiterated that Tamara was supposed to pick up the children the next day after she went out, and that she was supposed to be staying with Valerie the night before. However, after around midnight the night before, Tamara stopped communicating, and Josephine said it was unlike Tamara to cease communication because Tamara usually called 3 or 4 times a night to check on the children if she was babysitting to see how they were doing. Also, since Tamara didn't have a cell phone, detectives wanted to trace what number she had called from that night and later learned she called from Lamar's house. And that was all the information Josephine could give police. Later, the police talked to Eula's relatives, and her boyfriend told them Eula called him before midnight on the 7th, and he said she told him that she would be home soon, insinuating he didn't think she would be going out to the club. Loved ones of the other missing friends were also said to have told police of what they knew as well about their plans, but it hasn't been made public what they initially told police. However, reports do state that after questioning potential witnesses, authorities began searching a 45-mile radius around the communities in Enterprise and Op, and it included aerial searches to get a bird's-eye view of the area to try to find any of the missing six and/or Lamar's Caprice. Police also focused heavily on the nearby Pea River, which is only 8 miles from Op, and stretched about 155 miles long. Reports also state that Pea River was a popular destination with the locals of the area and was a hotspot for boaters and swimmers. It was also located about 50 feet away from Ballard Bridge, where many drove on every day. The bridge was known to be very narrow, and at night, it would be very dark and hard to drive on if you weren't used to it. While police searched the area of the bridge and river, they found no trace of the missing friends. But Lamar's father, Woodrow, told police that he too went to that area to try to find some clues. And reports state he said he noticed some tire tracks 4 feet from the river close to the bridge. But police were said to have taken his tip with a grain of salt and continued their investigation their way. By June 1999, the six friends had still not come back home, and police continued to search for them again around the area. And reports state they searched the river and bridge again, but were said to not have come up with any more clues initially, and were reported to not have seen the tire tracks Lamar's father spoke of. Also by this time, the families of the group of friends pleaded with the public for any information regarding their disappearance, and reports state that they eventually did receive some tips. Some of these tips, according to Tamara's cousin Josephine, came directly to her, with some people calling and saying they heard Lamar's car had been found along with the bodies of the friends. But when she would check on the validity of these claims, nothing came of them. But she suspected the calls were not prank calls. They were just tips from well-meaning people who didn't have their facts straight. Tips were also given to missing friend Angela Roberts' mother as well, but these tips also didn't lead anywhere. By July 1999, 2 months after the disappearance, families of the missing friends passed out hundreds of flyers around the communities in their aid to help find their loved ones and for any real clues regarding the disappearances. With Anthony's father telling the press he believed that if his son and friends were involved in an accident, some clues would have been found by now. Angela's mother, Annie, also said something similar, saying, quote-unquote, "We're talking about 6 people here. Even if they went somewhere, 6 people would not agree to do something like that. If they had an accident, we should have found the car. And if someone is holding them for whatever reason, we want them released. They all came down here just to party. After that, it's a mystery." By August 1999, the Alabama Bureau of Investigation also got involved in the search for the friends, as well as other state police, and a reward for $10,000 was offered for any information leading to the arrest of the person or persons responsible for the disappearance of the missing 6, if foul play was in fact involved. However, no real leads came in, and the case continued to go cold, and the friends remained missing. However, also by this month, the local Alabama chapter of the NAACP, or the National Association of the Advancement of Colored People, got involved in the search for the missing friends. And the group came up with their own theory, that maybe the disappearance of the friends was sinister, and that possibly a hate crime had occurred. You see, this was still rural Alabama, where racial tensions and hate crimes against many Black people were historically high in the past, even in the state as a whole, and members of the NAACP thought it wasn't far-fetched for something like this to happen to the friends, and encouraged local politicians and law enforcement to look into this theory. But reports state the politicians and other officials didn't take this claim too seriously, and continued with the theory that the friends had an accident somewhere. By late September 1999, as the investigation continued, law enforcement finally got the biggest tip they had. At the Pea River, someone spotted a car in the water under the Ballard Bridge. When officials got to the water, they found the car submerged in the river upside down and thought the car could have been, more than likely, Lamar's Chevy Caprice. when word spread around town that Lamar's car was possibly found. The missing friend's loved ones gathered around the area as officials prepared to remove the car from the water. As they removed the car, many family members of the loved ones sobbed and wailed, waiting to see if the search was finally over regarding their loved ones. And after the car was removed and divers and other officials took a look inside, they discovered remains inside. Due to the damage of the car, investigators came up with a possible theory of what may have happened, believing the friends were driving, and then somehow they missed the curve just before the Ballard Bridge, which sent the vehicle off an embankment and into the Pea River. After this submersion, it trapped the friends in the car, making them unable to exit. Reports also state divers made multiple attempts to recover any remains that were not inside the vehicle and recovered some nearby items, such as a watch that was stopped at the time of 3:39 a.m., meaning this was possibly the time the crash happened. Police also theorized that due to it being a dry summer that year in the area, it led to a decreased water level in the river while putting the water levels at 9 to 10 feet deep at that time, no longer concealing the vehicle. However, divers were unable to recover a missing rim and tire. After removing the remains, they were taken to a medical examiner's office to possibly be identified. And weeks later, the bodies of Tamara Ward, Angela Roberts, Eula Lee, Valerie McCoy, and Lamar Stackhouse were identified. But by late October 1999, detectives had another mystery on their hands. What about Anthony Reynolds? Reports state Anthony hung out with the group starting at Lamar's and was said to have been there with the group partying, and the security guard said he saw him leave with the group in the car from the club. So where was he? And shouldn't he have been found along with the others? Well, according to some at Hideaway that night, they were adamant they saw James with the group that night and leave with them. But that is a fact that could not be confirmed by police since his remains were not found with the group. Reports further state that after realizing James' remains weren't found with the other five, divers and police spent several weeks and months trying to find him, but could not find Anthony except for a dark jacket that was believed to be his, but this also could not be confirmed. And on July 11th, 2000, police announced they were calling the search off for James, still unsure of where he was. After the search was called off, Anthony's father told the press, quote-unquote, "I'll go to my grave knowing that his body is in that hole where the car was found. I know my son's body is packed in that mud too. I believe that in my heart. Something as heavy as the tire and rim are not going to float down the river. That's why I know my son and that tire are in that mud. It's just that the state doesn't have the type of equipment to go down in the mud and dig him or that tire out." He also added that he believed that maybe gators got to Anthony, but still thought Anthony was in that car when it crashed into the river. After Anthony's case was closed, the families of the missing six were left with so many unanswered questions. But for the families of the five victims who were found, they were grateful they had remains of their loved ones to bring home, but wished there was a different outcome. Angela's mother, Annie, later told the press, in part, quote-unquote, "Angela's not here, but she always lives in our hearts. She touched a lot of people in her life, and she was dear to us. I'm glad they at least did find her versus not knowing. I wouldn't want to be in Mr. Reynolds' shoes." for Valerie McCoy's partner, Isaac, although he too was grateful that Valerie's remains were found. He still had a lot of questions about what actually occurred the night the group disappeared. He told the press, quote unquote, "The police won't explain it, and the kids are asking what happened. A lot of people ask me about this. I can be in a store or at work, and someone will ask if I know how this happened. I don't mind talking about it, but I don't know myself." He also said he didn't believe the car left the road and went into the river because he felt it was too far from the road to the water. Eventually, the then Enterprise police chief released a statement to the public in late 2000 and said, quote unquote, "When we were told they found the car, it was a strange feeling. On one hand, we were glad we could finally give the family some closure, but saddened that that's the way it turned out." As of February 2025, Anthony Amp Reynolds is still considered a missing person, despite his case being officially closed. And many people around the Enterprise and Op Alabama areas still feel that they have more questions than answers. The story of the missing six comes from the sources of the Dothan Eagle, Pensacola News Journal, the Montgomery Advertiser, and others I'll put in the notes. All right, so that one probably was a weird case to you. I'm sure some of you are thinking it was just a crash. It happened. They went to the club. They were drinking. Drinking and driving could lead to bad things. They crashed, went over in the river, and unfortunately passed. And, you know, there's no telling what happened to Amp, Anthony Amp. But there's so many questions for me regarding this case. Like you all, like I just said, you all probably think it was just an accident and it happened. But I just want to know, because that one factor of Anthony not being in that car while not having finding his remains is really odd to me. And I'm going to tell you probably why. Well, I'll tell you why I think that. Because number one, I was doing a deep dive and I read that, like I said earlier, he had some legal trouble. And there were some theories going around that on the blogs and things like that, that people believed due to Anthony's legal troubles, he could have gotten in trouble and may not have been in that car when the group drove away. Apparently, he was on probation for dealing cocaine. And, you know, people were wondering, well, why would he get himself in that predicament if he could go right back to jail for being, you know, drinking or something like that? I don't know what his restrictions were regarding his probation, but people are wondering, you know, why would he even go to the club, you know, knowing he could be around things like that? You know, telling who he saw at Hideaway, he could have had some, you know, customers there. He could have possibly dealt there. Who knows? Like, you know, I don't know. No one knows what happened with Anthony that night. Some people saying, like they said, that he may not have gone to the club. He may have gone to Lamar's, just to hang out and not gone to the club, went back to his home. But if he did that, where is he? Some people say he could have been met with foul play on his own before, you know, the group went to the club and they discarded his body somewhere else. They said, you know, he could have been a drug deal gone bad. He could have made someone mad and it went there. Some people saying he could have gone to Hideaway. Some people who were at that club, the small club, it was located in subsidized housing and it was a small club. So he could have been a regular. I don't know. He could have just, you know, gone and they, you know, he could have gone. He could have gone to the club and went with the friends and left with the friends and his body just, you know, went somewhere else in the river. No one knows. Some people also came up with a theory that maybe Anthony, like I said, was in the car when it crashed and got out alive and started a new life somewhere, which I think that's kind of far-fetched because why would he do that unless he has something to do with the crash? Again, I'm not trying to speak ill of Anthony. It's just some theories that I've read about what could have happened to him because his body was not found with the others. I also read that Eula, when she was found, she was dressed apparently in some jeans and a tank top. And according to her family and friends, like her closer family and friends, and they would have said, they said that they didn't believe she would, she planned on going to the club that night. Maybe she was coerced or something because she was decked out usually when she went to the club, like she would wear like dresses, heels, jewelry, all that stuff. But when she was found, allegedly she had a tank top and jeans, and they thought she was dressed down to go to a club. Even if it was a small club like Hideaway, they thought, you know, this is odd. Like what was going on there? Also they thought maybe with, Lamar, I also read due to his legal troubles, he also dabbled a little bit with drugs, like dealing drugs a little bit. Like he could have had a drug deal gone bad and that somebody ordered a hit on him and the friends were collateral damage. Because they don't, they like the security guard said that they, she's, he saw him physically drunk and encouraged him to let one of the ladies, drive the car. Now, when he, when I read that, the security guard said he let, said one of the ladies drive. I don't know if that meant that James was not in the car because why would he let one of the ladies ask one of the ladies to drive the car? Or was it simply because one of the ladies was not as intoxicated? Because even the security guard did say that he saw Anthony in the car, but he encouraged one of the ladies to switch with Lamar since he was physically drunk. Yeah, I don't know. That's confusing to me as well. Regarding the hate crime, as many of you know, Alabama has a history of severe racism. Some people said they could have had car trouble, and, you know, they had some incident with a racist and they got, you know, pushed into the river in the car somehow and that's how they died. But I don't know if that, that may be far-fetched as well. It may not be. Like I said, this is just another theory. They also, people around the communities thought also that if the car had been in the river that long, regardless of dry weather, they thought the car should have had more damage instead of just being dented. I didn't see the car that well because the pictures of the car I did see were in black and white, and I couldn't really tell much. I just go by what the reports say. They just said that they found the car with some damage and the bodies inside, except for Anthony. And some people, like I said, the people who were at the scene when the car was pulled out, many thought that they should have had more damage since it was in water that long. But again, I don't know about that, but it could have been. It could have had, they could have, it could have been pushed in the river later. Some people said that maybe some officers were involved in this tragedy because they said that people in the communities in the area of Op and Enterprise, Black people had issues with cops in the past, and they thought maybe that the cops had something to do with it and they were covering it up. Again, I don't know, just another theory. It's just very, very odd and sad. And the biggest thing for me is, you know, where is Anthony? Did he get swept up further into the river? Did he unfortunately get caught by some gators? You know, I just don't know. It's just very weird. And I just don't know what to say to that. I want to know what you all think, though. I'm going to post about it on Instagram either tonight or tomorrow, and you can leave some comments, maybe questions. We can all talk about it together. And I just realized I called Anthony James like a second or two ago. I'm so sorry about that. There's no James listed in the story. It's Anthony, the missing young man. Anthony Reynolds, not James. I don't know where James came from. But that's it. Thank you for tuning in to this brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And I hope you found this case interesting. If you haven't done so already, I would love for you all to leave a rating and maybe a review if your podcast listening platform has a rating system. Also, you can check out 90s Crime Time on Instagram, primarily on the weekends, where I post about other 90s cases you may not have heard about. I'll also have 90s Crime Stories on Medium.com, where I've written about other 90s cases in more length on that website, and I'll post a link in the notes to the page if you'd like to read them. Again, stay safe and healthy, and I will see you soon for a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time.